To understand a country, you really need to listen to people. Over the next 3 days, we're going to do just that by traveling through the heart of Pakistan on a train with our correspondent, Phil Reeves. Our journey begins in the north in the city of Rawalpindi.
This is Pakistan's most magical hour.
This is my absolute favorite time of day in South Asia. Early in the morning, the sky is pale blue. People are wandering around wrapped in big woolen shawls against the chill. The sun has recently risen and is a big orange coin low in the sky, casting this lovely apricot-colored light.
I'm here to catch a train that'll take me 1,000 miles south. We'll travel down the middle of Pakistan to its largest city, Karachi, on the shores of the Arabian Sea. My fellow passengers prepare for the journey with tea and cakes. Our train pulls in.
It's green and cream-coloured and somewhat battered-looking.
And we're off. Doors are still open. And during this journey, we're going to ask people where they're going. I've talked to them about that, but I don't just mean where they're going today. I mean where they're going at this point in history, in this part of the world, because there's no better place to meet people than on a train.
Farooq Ansari is my name. I'm working in a private pharmaceutical company. I am looking after for marketing and sales department of pharmaceutical products.
Farooq Ansari is on his way to give a pep talk to a sales team in the city of Multan, about halfway along our journey. Business is pretty good these days, he says. Some medicines are selling alarmingly well.
We have medicines for anxiety, we have medicines for depression. There is a huge growth in the sales of this sort of medicine. As far as commercial interest is concerned, we are happy that we are selling our medicine, but as a national, this also creates an anxiety for me that what we are doing.
You're anxious about the amount of anxiety medicine that is being sold because people are anxious about the country.
Yes.
There's much to be anxious about. Every other week seems to bring a sectarian massacre or a militant bombing. Yet people here often tell me what they really worry about is how to secure a toehold in a society where so much depends on who you are, who you know, or who you pay. Sit down for a minute with Aftab Jamil. He's 24 and he's heading home.
My mom will cook for my favorite dishes. It's like rice, meats, etc.
So you'll be treated like a hero when you arrive.
Of course.
Jamil will get a hero's welcome because he's just landed his first job. He's a civil engineer. He says finding work was not easy without connections.
Political involvement is too much in this field. So it's very difficult to be an on a merit.
To be there on merit?
Yeah.
How many different jobs have you applied for?
I can apply in a roadway, highways, motorways, airports, buildings department, irrigation department. I can get a job.
How many applications? 10? 15?
No, it's 1,000.
You've made thousands of applications.
Yeah.
Jamil's father couldn't pull any strings to help him. He's a blacksmith. Jamil says he heard from a friend about a vacancy on a highway construction project, and when he was hired, it felt like winning the lottery. When you're young and single and get your first pay packet, it's party time, right? Not for Jamil. He earns the equivalent of $150 a month. He says he must send every dime home to help pay for his sister's weddings, except for $5, which he keeps as fun money. We chat and look out of the window at a countryside still governed by tradition.
There's sugarcane, there are mango groves, there are stagnant ponds, there are donkeys and children and goats and sheep and small mud villages, half mud, half brick, and palm trees and paddy fields. And lots of little pathways, little mud paths running across the landscape, which is mostly flat.
Roughly 200 million people live out in that landscape. More than half are 25 or under. If they can't find a toehold in society, they could easily fall prey to Islamist extremists. Militant groups are very active here. Hawa Ijaz sees that firsthand.
Dangerous, very dangerous.
हमें थ्रेड बहुत मिलते हैं, वेरी डेंजरस।
Ijaz is a cop. He started out 2 years ago as a constable. He's just been promoted, so he's on his way to a training course. Ijaz is 25. His parents died when he was in his teens. He says he has no political connections or money, and that means he knows precisely how high his career will take him.
I can go up to ASI, Assistant Subinspector. I'm a poor man. You have to grease the palms of someone if you want to go beyond that.
Ijaz says an assistant sub-inspector in the police is paid $400 a month.
And you'll be happy with that?
Sir, very happy, sir.
That seems strange to me. Why not push against that ceiling? Yet what matters to Ijaz is that his job is permanent.
You feel safe in this job?
My kitchen is safe.
Ijaz is thinking about his sons. Being a policeman gives him some social clout. He believes that will eventually make it easier for his boys to find work and secure that precious toehold.
This will be a plus point for them because of my job as a policeman.
To get ahead in Pakistan, you have to think ahead. Farooq Ansari from the pharmaceutical company is twice Ijaz's age, but he has teenage kids and knows that young people are under a lot of pressure.
They are worried about their country. In this sort of condition, in this sort of political culture, they are feeling that we are going towards destruction.
We arrive in Multan. Ansari steps off our train into a world that seems to need his anxiety meds. Philip Reeves, NPR News.